A ground war in Asia? Hello? But you know how that goes. So thanks everybody who made all the magic happen tonight and makes it happen every night. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan. You heard from both of them tonight. Thanks to Texas Betsy. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Great post, Why the Left, How the Left Loses at Kulturkampf. Go read it. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, a cavalcade of crazy. I imagine there's probably something coming in the near future from Reverbo, intrepid that he is. My head writer is David in Tennessee. John Fox is our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, and a darn fine talk show host in his own right. We just got to get his schedule sorted out. And many thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben took time away from his weekend to get the website back up and running. So many thanks to him for his continued efforts. Talk radio on the Internet would be practically non-existent without Ben Birch, who started saving talk radio on his own initiative in 2002 and has gone forward ever since that day. Thanks go out, as ever, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. They're the other piece of the puzzle that keeps all of this going every month. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is freezing, flipping cold here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia. We're expecting another 4 inches of white, powdery misery overnight. It's been doing it for several days now. Part of the reason I didn't make it to Nash Vegas, along with others. But, you know what? It's warm enough inside to broadcast, and that's really what matters. I've got a little unvented space heater here providing heat and warmth inside the studio, so we should be okay, I think. Oh, and then I remember when I was a little boy. Oh, it must be the fumes. No worries. We'll be all right. My apologies to those of you who may have tried to get on the website over the course of the weekend. Sometime about yesterday-ish, it went down in flames, but it's back up now and everything's happy and good, and hope that it stays that way. Oh, yeah, I know, Marty. You want cold, talk to Shannon Moore in Alaska. No, I don't, not, no, really, no thank you. That's, you know, living in Alaska is self-abuse, as far as I'm concerned. Living where I live is self-abuse, as far as I'm concerned. Really, one of these days I'm gonna go out and buy a trailer and a snowmobile, and just like my buddy once said, I'm going to put that damn thing on that trailer and put that trailer behind my truck. I'm going to start driving south until I pull up somewhere for gasoline. Somebody looks at it and says, what in the Sam hell is that thing? And then I'll know I'm far enough south. Right. You know what? Like I've said before, winter was cute and fun and exciting and stuff. When it happened, you know, when you got a decent snowfall about once every 3 years when I was a kid, that's the kind of winter I like. This frozen freaking North Bowl can... Ugh. But then again, I guess it's just a... You know, I don't... This is one of those things. Maybe this is a question we need to ask. How about clearing roads of snow and ice? You know, the salt trucks... the sand, the snow plows, all of that stuff. Is that part of the socialism that the right wing and the godforsaken, dumber than a box of homemade stupid teabaggers hate? Because, see, I wouldn't mind winter so much if we could just get the damned roads cleared. But it started in earnest, Saturday and into Saturday night. And by Sunday, it was just a mess. Now that we've got enough state road equipment to keep the turnpike open, and the turnpike is what we really get worked up about here in southern West Virginia. But even through, and I had occasion to be in Beckley yesterday. We had a broadcast event with Dr. Bill, and in fact, I will put the audio up at WhiteRoseSociety.org so you can hear it. The it's also available. It's also available at our Ustream page, the video of it. It involved a rather tortured drive over to the Irma Bird Center, where Dr. Bill is the president of Beckley, the Beckley campus of Concord College. And there was a great conversation, and we streamed it live. We Ustreamed it live. The website was busy being crashed at the time. But anyway, his historic conversation about the history of the founding of the United States, those conversations always put me in a sort of a special frame of mind, if you know what I mean. And I asked a question of Dr. Bill yesterday during the broadcast from off camera. I asked because it was not about me; it was about Dr. Bill. But I specifically asked, when people like Todd Akin can take to the floor of the House of Representatives and with a straight face declare that the Pilgrims left England to found the Massachusetts Bay Colony in order to escape socialism. You'll recall that almost caused me to spontaneously have a baby when I ran that. But I asked Dr. Bill, when they can do that, and when the Glenn Becks of the world can do what he does to history, and there's no one there to defend history, then, from an objective standpoint, what happens to history? Is it even history anymore? When all pretense of objectivity is gone and the sole purpose is to make history serve as some sort of the gratuitous affirmation to a present, sick, twisted worldview. What happens? And I think it's something that I would like to have Dr. Bill expand upon at some greater length somewhere down the road, because he and Keith Lilly, his colleague there, had some fascinating conversations about the founding, and I think he'll enjoy it when I do get it sent up to the White Rose servers. But it's a valid question. What happens? Because if a country rewrites or allows people to rewrite its history to suit a particular political bent, then isn't that the greatest the greatest level of dishonesty of all? You know, Dante reserved the ninth circle of hell for Judas. I take a much more charitable view of Judas than Dante did. I would put the perverters of history somewhere down in that ninth level. Because by perverting the past, they intoxicate the future. You know, Danny Goldberg had a piece at The Nation that I found myself wandering toward in the course of some reading earlier today. I got to that by a Daily Kos article by VC3, and VC3's diary was in turn referenced. See, this is the beautiful way that the blogosphere works. VC3's piece was referenced by our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, who, with your help, did complete his fundraising drive. But Matt posted a new article today called How the Left Loses at Kulturkampf. You'll recall that Kulturkampf is a word of Matt's own coining, and like Mark Twain, he just can't resist a good German compound noun. Haben Sie gehört, haben geworden sein. Bless you. But in How the Left Loses at Kulturkampf, Matt makes some observations, and he also turned to the Daily Kos article, and in turn, I followed it there, and then wound up at an article from The Nation written by Danny Goldberg, who once upon a time had a little something or another to do with Air America, and I always find these stories quite interesting. What an interesting monster. Right, you know what I mean. The name of the article is Mad Men versus Math Men. But lo and behold, Danny Goldberg has a run at this issue of history. And early in the article, well, the very beginning of the article, as a matter of fact, he says, almost half of the public is either misinformed or subject to unanswered right-wing narratives. We could spend 3 hours on that sentence alone. Subject to unanswered right-wing narratives. Well, who does it fall to answer? Well, that would be us. You know, the me's and the you's and answered in daily conversation or in some form of broadcast medium. Right. Almost half of the public is either misinformed or subject to unanswered right-wing narratives. If I believed that there was a chance of Sharia law being imposed in the United States, I too would be gravely concerned. If I believed that most Europeans and Canadians had inferior health care to that of average Americans, I too would be against health care reform. If I believed that man-made global warming did not exist or that there was nothing we could do about it and that environmental efforts were responsible for unemployment, I'd be against cap and trade. If I believed that prisoner abuse would make my family significantly less likely to be killed by terrorists, my thinking about torture would be different. And if I believed that the problems with the economy had been caused by too much government instead of too little, that my personal freedom was threatened by the government instead of large corporations, I'd probably be a Tea Party supporter and a Republican. Yeah, we could do 3 hours on that. Easy. But he goes on, he says, unless and until progressives change the mindsets... Goddamn progressives. Liberals! There I am, cranky old man, I guess. Unless until progressives change the mindset of the tens of millions of people who believe right-wing mythology... Interesting word, that, mythology... who never read the New York Times or listen to NPR, who never watch any TV news other than Fox, future elections, pay attention here, future elections will have disappointing results for progressives regardless of who is in the White House. Now, I'm not going to sit here and read the entire article, but the next paragraph is pretty damn telling, too, so I want to share this with you. Even Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert have limits to their ability to deprogram those who have been indoctrinated by conservative orthodoxy. As David Bromwich recently wrote in the New York Review of Books, and this is a hell of a quote, "You can learn from them why the wrong ideas are funny, but you cannot learn why the wrong ideas are wrong." Put that on a postcard and mail it home to mama. But it's the same thing again. It's the question of how we... of how we approach the rewriting and tormenting of history, or if we approach it at all. And a lot of our side doesn't approach it. A lot of our side snickers into its Chablis glasses. Oh, look. Oh, my. Oh, Muffendorf. Do look what the little teabagger people are believing now. Oh, aren't they just precious? Don't think we don't have those, because we do. Yeah, Jim, I know. Kulturkampf was the war between Bismarck and the Roman Catholic Church originally. I understand that. But Matt has sort of made it his own, coining it for the failures of the left or liberals or progressives or whatever we're calling ourselves to actually deal with the issues that we say we care about. You can read How the Left Loses at Kulturkampf over at Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. But I was reminded, listening to Dr. Bill and Keith Lilly yesterday, and I was reminded again by the Danny Goldberg article. And I'm constantly reminded, just because, you know, we kind of tune into history here on this program because we understand that it has a certain level of importance in informing the present and shaping the future. And there's just something profoundly distressing when Glenn Beck or Todd Akin or any other of a number of thousands, literally thousands if not millions of right-wingers run about baldly and bravely, boldly and ignorantly prating about things that they know utterly nothing about. There's a flavor to it, and I hope you'll forgive me using the metaphor, but there's a flavor to it of, you know, like Glenn Beck just making history his bitch. And when he does that, oh, the damage. The damage. Because while Lyle and Muffy create certain problems for us over here on the imaginary left, Mervyn and Marvelline are a whole different problem set on the right. You know, the right wing likes to go babbling about on about the founders, which is what made what Dr. Bill was talking about yesterday so interesting. It was sort of an extension of what we did last July, only in a sort of shortened format. But Dr. Bill likes to talk about the founders too. Dr. Bill likes to talk about the founders a lot, but he likes to talk about them from the standpoint of actually looking at what they wrote and said and how they lived, not how he imagines they did. Because you see, that's what you get with the Glenn Becks and these rewriters of history. You get this sort of Tinkerbell approach to history in which, if we only believe it was that way, if we only believe that the pilgrims came to America to flee socialism, if we only believe that, it will be that way. Oh, clap harder, wing nuts. You're not believing enough. You know, we've all seen Peter Pan, right? But knowing the fascination they have for the founders and the framers, and for instance, the conversation we had Friday night discussing Cato the Younger, that poisonous freak from the end of the Roman Republican era, and Kate's trenchant observation that, yes, that's who the Cato Institute, that miserable right-wing, libertarian, sickening gang of economic thugs, that's who they named their group after. With all of that, and with the snow falling and the temperatures dropping and me just being kind of cranky, it took me back to the framers and the founders. And so, therefore, a big old light bulb went off above my head when I got a note from my head writer, David, in Tennessee over the weekend. Even as far as Tennessee, he, too, was dealing with some snow. But that first skiff of snow was just enough to get the cognitive juices flowing. And so David made a couple of observations, and they so grabbed me that I thought, you know, I got to share this with you. He said, on a sub-freezing day, George Washington, ever the dedicated farmer, father of the country, an inveterate tinkerer, rode for hours just trying to get something done around the home place. The home place was, of course, a mansion staffed by slaves, but, you know, George just wanted to set his hand to something, get something done. Well, as a process of that, running around in the cold like that, in the pre-industrial south of the newly minted United States of America, George came down with pneumonia. Cover up your head or you'll come down with pneumonia. Come on, anybody that grew up in cold weather's heard that from a mother or a grandmother, right? Because they've got the brains. But that sent him to his bed, sick. And bear in mind, you don't get pneumonia from dampness. You don't get a cold or the flu from it either. You get those things from either picking up a bug or, after long exposure to sub-freezing temperatures that irritate the air passages and thereby ensure that damage is done, making secondary infection more likely and possible. So after going riding about the home place until he managed to bring himself down with pneumonia, George Washington took to his bed. And he wasn't getting better. You could argue he was getting sicker, but certainly not better. So, in what turned out, and I think our good friend Eugene Finnerman would agree here, he at FinnermanWorks.com, F-I-N-E-R-M-A-N, Works.com, he's often noted or noting in his posts about the fact that so-and-so survived the medical science of the day, which, yeah, pulled through. Not so much the illness, but the doctoring. Well, medical science of Washington's later life was not exactly on the cutting edge of anything except maybe the lancet they used to open a vein when it was time for the bleeding or the leeches or, you know, left a little bit of the black bile out of the ill humors. But the doctors were, in fact, called. And the doctor came into the room, took one look at pneumonia-inflicted George Washington, father of his country, and said, you know what the father of our country needs? Good bleeding. Yep, needs a good bleeding. Get me a basin. Let me see if I've got a guy. I think I've got a rusty lancet here that I used on somebody with smallpox or polio a little bit ago. Okay, that's fine. Get a good bottle of liquor in here. No, not for sterilizing the instruments, but for steadying the hand of the physician, more likely. No, what he needs is a good bleeding. Now, let's sit back for a minute and take a look at bloodletting. From the vantage point of we here in the end of the first decade of the 21st century, we can look at it and say, bleeding? Bleeding? How's that gonna help? I mean, when they've taken a pint from you down to the Red Cross when you're in the donating mood, they still make you stick around and drink orange juice and eat cookies till you can stand on your feet again, because it ain't necessarily easy on the system, the bleeding. But medical science at the time had, on its own hook, and with no independent data, but they were still working on that whole scientific method thing. They had come to a sort of, a priori conclusion. You know what? Bleeding helps. It's a good thing, the bleeding. Never mind the fact that when they bled people, as many of them died as survived, if not more. Well, you know what? It could be we didn't bleed them enough. Welcome to the early days of science. But no, there it was, a medical technique that was accepted and proven and put out for the public consumption and usage mainly by the people who were lauded for having come up with the idea. So in other words, there was no independent verification of its efficacy. And they got out the lancet and they opened a vein and they bled off a pint or so or whatever. You know what? You know what a guy with pneumonia needs? All his blood. All of it. Really. Needs all his blood to carry all the oxygen he can. But no, they bled off George Washington. They bled him and bled him. I even remember my father talking. Goddamn doctors bled George Washington to death. And that's how it is with a doctor. My father didn't think much of doctors. No, they bled him. And bled him, and bled him, and bled him. You know, I don't think we bled him enough. Let's bleed him again. Oh, yes, I say. And they eventually weakened him to the point that he was as white as a ghost, white as a sheet. And thus having been weakened, George Washington, gentleman planter, slave owner, and father of our country, died. Pining for the fjords, was he. Emphasis here on the fact that the doctors of the time was relying upon a technique that they themselves, within their own little world, only they accepted as being useful. I mean, Jesus, when you went to the... You know how the barber pole came about? And you still see them here and there. It's a red and white striped pole, and usually it's got a little motor on it, and you go, ner, 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 and you can watch the little stripes go, and it's kind of, right. Stay on topic, Bob. Well, they got that way because originally the pole was just white. But after your local barber had gotten done sopping up blood, he would wrap them around the pole just to get them out of the way. And so you had white, red, white, red. In a sort of curving pattern down the pole. Yeah, think about that next time you see a barber pole. Think about that with this Christmas season upon us, when those giant peppermint sticks come out and they're called barber poles and you're supposed to give them to your kids at Christmas. Barber pole my ass. Tastes like A positive with mint. Well, but that's because barbers dealt with razors and knives and stuff, and they would occasionally cut people, and you had to sop stuff up. You could also go to your local barber for a good bleeding as well. They were in on the bleeding racket, too. Well, so fast forward to 2010 and the waning days thereof. And here we have the political and economic equivalent of bloodletting being shown us again as some sort of remedy for what ails us. What does ail us? Gosh, we've got the galloping unemployment. We do have, we've got a deficit. The deficit was caused by putting wars on credit cards and giving tax cuts to rich people who promised they'd create jobs and then, of course, didn't. Oh, don't think for a minute that I've forgotten that this is Moran Monday. Oh, no. No, we're going to get to a Moran, trust me. Oh, we're going to get to several, believe me. That was some straight up the razor sharp, no pun intended, idea, that bloodletting. How many native peoples engaged in that along the way? I'm just asking. Not a lot, no. Granted, there are murals and so forth in the Maya country that show the king of the Maya, whatever, you know, 72 possum or 15 ocelot or whatever his name was. And he's got a magway thorn tied to a knotted cord, and he's driving it through his tongue. Jesus, that had to hurt. There's some other murals that show him doing the same thing through his Johnson. Here, let us be grown up about it. Through his penis. Neither one, thanks. But when he did it, he let the blood drip onto paper, bark paper. And then the bark paper was burnt as a burnt offering for God, who apparently has a thing about smelling burning flesh. It's perfume to it or something. But it wasn't done to heal anything unless it was on a sort of macro philosophical or economic level. You know, you stuck the magway thorn through your tongue when famine was upon the land. It's not like you're going to be needing it to eat anyway, but hoping to ease the thing. Never mind. But mostly when it came to healing, your native peoples will know the lay of the land and their herbs and teas and balms and poultices and, you know, and the couple of good rattle shakes and a shimmy here and a shammy there. And a lot of times people got feeling better. Oh, but not with the white people. Let's cut something! And so we come down to the present day, as noted. And lo and behold, here's the right wing, the Repig-Lickin' Party, who have a wisdom and an economic science, if you will, that only they accept. Because no one else does. They had 10 long years of the Bush tax cuts and never created a damn job. And it was, you know, and now of course the morons out there saying, well, you know, the reason they're not creating any jobs right now is they're not certain if the tax cuts are going to end, so they don't know if they're going to be able to create any jobs. So the only way we can get them to create jobs is if we extend the tax cuts, and then they'll get out there creating the jobs. They had 10 years to create jobs, bupkis. But that's okay, because they're using a received wisdom that they're the only one. They're hearing voice. There are voices in Repig-Lickin' heads that only they can hear. You know, the rest of the world, when that happens, we give them some medicine and a soft room to land in. Repig-Lickins, we treat them like they're actually engaged in a viable conversation. Shoot me. No, don't. But that's what it is. Economically speaking, the Repig-Lickin' Party, with their tax cut babble, are the same as the doctors that said, you know, we just didn't bleed him enough yet. It's not that they want to bleed us now. They've bled us for 10 years. And we're all pale and white and sickly and laying there matching the sheets and everything. And here comes the goddamn Repig-Lickin' Party saying once again, you know what? Need to bleed him. Need to bleed them. Need to bleed them a few billion dollars. Because, you know, pulling that, yes, indeedy. We can't, no. We can't let those tax cuts expire and let the nation start getting well again and rebuilding the health in its body politic, to extend the metaphor. Oh, hell no! Need to bleed them. That's what they need. That's what America needs. Good bleeding. It's the same thing, isn't it? The same thing that killed George Washington is the same thing that stands now on the brink of killing our economy, maybe for well, all, and good. Or for poor, all, and bad. The only guy who walked away from the bloodletting of George Washington any the better was the doctor who still got paid. The only people who will walk away from an extension of the Bush tax cuts are the Repiglicans, that top 2 to 1% of the country who own 36% of the wealth here. They're the only ones who are going to walk away feeling the rest of us, like I said, are going to lay there as pale as our sheets. As David in Tennessee noted, Washington's doctor got a piece of silver, a dead man, and assurances of the wisdom from their cronies for their efforts. Well, you know, it's not like you didn't bleed him right. You bled him real good, Doc. Sometimes it's just in the hands of the Lord, right? Well, with the tax cuts, the rich are going to get richer. The Repiglicans are going to tell each other, hey, look, we're just a big old flock of patriotic genii. And there will be all manner of talking heads all over the electric TV box, and quite frankly, by about 1,000 to 1 on the radio, saying, "Oh well, you know, there's a very good possibility this might work this time." Enter Lucy with football. Meanwhile, apparently, the guy that we worked our asses off to get elected, Barack Obama, is standing there next to the doctor with his Daffy Duck suit on going, you know, you just may be correct. Bleed him no more. For 2 more years. 2 more years, I say. It's indubitable. It's impossible to conceive that people with such economic wisdom wouldn't be scrupulously correct. No, Daffy. No, we've got pronoun trouble. We got real pronoun trouble. But isn't it? It is. It's spot on. It's the same damn thing. I am informed by Jim that the proper term is exsanguination for bloodletting. And, Jim, I have no idea where the term Johnson originated. It's hand in hand with John Thomas, I think. Just sort of. But it's the same thing. Really? No empirical evidence whatsoever that tax cuts will benefit this country any more than there was empirical evidence that bloodletting was what a pneumonia-stricken George Washington really needed. He would have been better off with some mulled wine. But, you know, you can get mulled wine from the wine purveyor. The doctors don't have a hand. They didn't have hands. They didn't have cards in that game. But from that day to this, it persists. And thus, oh, like I said, you thought I'd forgotten. Ye of little faith. Thus it is that we come to our first nominee for Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up behind this thin, thin gauze of cybernetic canvas. You will find right-wing morons, the likes of which you have never seen before. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You cannot tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that lets you tell the morons. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed. Moran Monday and our first nominee. Our first nominee is Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich, who took to the airwaves on Sunday to opine as to how to fix a broken economy. You know, the economy that brown guy in our White House broke. you're not going to be okay with this. You're gonna want me to play this extra loud when we're done. Fox News Sunday, Newt Gingrich. Yeah, you can only, I don't know, who comes next? The jugglers, the clown car, the sword swallower, the fire eater, the bearded lady, the guy who gets shot out of the cannon. Hey, can we shoot Newt Gingrich out of the cannon? Oh, I do believe I've forgotten my fudge. Where did we put that net? No, okay, well, I'm gonna fade down the Moran music so that we can have actual Moran words. How's that? Yeah, I hope it works for you.
The number one challenge in America is jobs and paychecks. What Republicans ought to do is say to people who create jobs, how many years does the tax code have to be extended for you to make an investment decision? I mean, the goal is not to have an annual extension of the current tax code and have every business in the country trapped saying, well, I don't know, I want to make a 20-year investment in a factory.
But if it's, let's say it's the compromise were 2 years or 3 years. Would you sign on for that?
There is a number, but I would have the business leadership.
There's a number. There's a hole in the bottom of the sea. There's a hole in the bottom of the sea. Did you hear that? What Republicans ought to do, is say to people who create jobs, how many years does the tax code need to be extended for you to make an investment decision? Well, you know what? We can actually work with Newt Gingrich's suggestion. And we can apply empirical data to it. Because the fact of the matter is, we know one number that doesn't work. And that is 10 years. 10 years of these tax cuts were not enough to create one miserable job. Not one. Not one. I happened to be paying attention during the 8 long, benighted, miserable, nightmare years of the Bush administration when he hemorrhaged jobs. There we are with the blood analogies again, but I'm sorry, they work, don't they? No, we had 10 years of them and didn't get one job out of it. If we were plus one to the jobs good, I mean, just get this inside your head and live with it for a little bit. If we were plus one to the jobs good, that job would have cost the American people how many hundreds of billions of dollars for one job? As it was, however, we didn't come out plus one to the good on jobs out of the Bush tax cuts. We're still in the negative numbers. We're still in the red. We're still climbing out of the hole that we dug, or the Repiglicans dug for us. Interesting, after you've bled something to death, you usually bury it, and that involves a hole, doesn't it? What Republicans ought to do is say to people who create jobs, how many years does the tax code need to be extended for you to make an investment decision? Moran number next. I offer you the investment houses of Wall Street. They've gotten in on the act, too. Wall Street has declared that it just can't quite... Well, they're too nervous. They've got the dribbling trots, Wall Street does. And it's really stymieing them. Headline from the New York Times: tax fear may move bonuses earlier. It's going to take a minute. Tax fear may move bonuses early. Oh. Congress is debating tax rates, and that has Wall Street nervously eyeing the calendar. Worried that lawmakers will allow taxes to rise for the wealthiest Americans beginning next year, financial firms are discussing whether to move up their bonus... I'm going to have to back up. because otherwise the screaming's going to start, and we're only 39 minutes into the program. Okay, do this as a news guy. Worried that lawmakers will allow taxes to rise for the wealthiest Americans beginning next year, financial firms are discussing whether to move up their bonus payouts from next year to this month. At stake is a portion of the hefty annual payouts that are a familiar part of the compensation culture on Wall Street, as well as a juicy target of popular anger. If Congress does not extend the Bush-era tax cuts for the highest income levels, a typical worker... I'm not going to make it. A typical worker who earns $1 million bonus. $1 million bonus. We live in an America where there are $1 million bonuses. No, really. Now, you don't get them, and I don't get them. But apparently, if you shuffle electrons on Wall Street, you can. And here's the fun part. You're not actually doing anything. Man, what a dodge. A typical worker who earns $1 million bonus. Moment. Sidebar to the editor of the New York Times, please. Do us a favor, old gray lady, or whatever the hell you call yourselves these days. Do us a favor out here in flyover country. Do us a favor who understand what it is to make a choice between 89 cent a can beans and 69 cent a can beans, and we buy the 69 cent a can beans because of the extra 20 cents for the name brand. Do us a favor out here! Don't ever, 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 ever allow to occur in another news story coming from your newspaper the words, a typical worker who earns $1 million bonus. There is no way under the sun that that person can be ever described as being even remotely resembling something called typical. A typical worker who earns $1 million bonus. Who are they trying to kid? Am I supposed to think that the guy who empties the waste paper cans at the end of the day, that he's just, you know, the day before Christmas, oh, here's my $1 million bonus because I work... No! Typical person. Whew! A typical worker who earns $1 million bonus would pay $40,000 to $50,000 more in taxes next year than this year, depending on base salary. Your experience may vary. I'm just going to say something here because I've never had $1 million. I will likely never have $1 million. I'll never likely have a $500,000. But if you live in a country that allows you to earn not $1 million a year, but just because it's the end of the year, you get $1 million for not having done anything particularly spectacular. But if you live in a country where that happens for you, you know, cue up that unfunny little Russian guy from a few years. What a country! Yakov Smirnov. What a country! Because you didn't just make $1 million that year. That's your damn bonus! For doing nothing! That's your river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl. All for merely investing in the beefsteak mines. Nothing. But if I... And maybe this is because I'm old-fashioned or simplistic or sentimental. But $1 million is still a lot of money. Even now. And if I lived in a country that allowed me to do almost nothing and paid me millions of dollars to do it, and I got a bonus of $1 million, and in the same breath I was referred to in the New York Times as a typical worker, you know what? If my taxes went up by $40,000 to $50,000, I would hand carry my tax check to Washington, D.C. and ask them if maybe they couldn't use another 50. The rich in this country have no appreciation whatsoever for where the hell they live. Because there are other countries that aren't addicted to the electronic morphine drip, where when news stories come out about people getting $1 million bonuses that refer to the people getting them as typical workers, there are other countries out there where the aggrieved population will get yonder pitchforks and yonder torches and go for a little walkabout. But not here. Not here. Goldman Sachs, of course, is one of the companies that's discussing how to time its bonus season. Jesus, they call it bonus season. I guess this makes me just seem terribly shallow or callow or maybe jealous or envious. I'm really not. You know, I have a hard enough time keeping up with the stuff that I have to do as a member of the poverty class. I can't imagine what it would be like to have to keep up with, is this the month we get the oil change in the Bentley? Or is this the month when we redo the engines on the Gulfstream? Oh, hell, I forgot. Last month was the month we were supposed to scrape the hull of the yacht for the goddamn barnacles. Muffy, why did you let me forget? I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. It'd drive me batshit. But Goldman Sachs is worried. They're thinking, and bear in mind, the typical worker bonus of $1 million, what they're thinking about here is making it a $2 million bonus. Because next year they might have to pay taxes on it for the privilege of having an entire nation bow and scrape at their beck and call. Apparently, typical worker didn't go over too well with Michael in Sebastopol either. Worker? Worker? Yeah, it sort of takes all... It's like Sam said to Bogart in Casablanca as they were in Paris and about to get overrun by Nazis, and they were drinking all the champagne, and Sam looked up and said, kind of takes all the sting out of getting occupied, don't it, boss? Yeah, that $1 million bonus takes a lot of the sting out of being called a worker. Oh, man, this is one hell of a circus. I can't wait till the midgets with the banjos come on. The typical worker who earns $1 million bonus, he's going to get a $2 million bonus so that maybe he'll be able to save an extra $20,000 to $50,000, because the United States... Messaging moment. Please make a note of it. To the right wing, the United States of America is not worth an extra $20,000 to $50,000 on $1 million. Really. Write that one down. Next time some right-wing gas bag is talking about, well, I want the tax cuts to stay there in case I get rich too. Really? You do? So if you made that $1 million, it wouldn't be worth an extra $20,000 to $50,000 to you to make sure that America stays America? Not worth it, huh? Didn't think so. we find ourselves back with Newt Gingrich again. Let's back up and let's let Chris Wallace finish his question to him. Something tells me that this time he's not going to talk with Newt about how manly he is or whether or not he ought to be going to a gentleman's club in New York City like he did that other feller, because if you mention going to a gentleman's club in New York City with Newt Gingrich, Newt will probably say, well, hell, get the cab.
Say it's the compromise were 2 years or 3 years. Would you sign on for that?
There is a number, but I would have the business leadership of the country describe the number.
And would you agree to extend the unemployment benefits as part of that deal?
I would agree to a short-term extension of unemployment, but I have proposed, since we spent $134 billion last year in unemployment, that we change the entire program into a worker training program and not give anybody money for doing nothing.
Because, you know, that's what unemployment insurance is. It's money for nothing. And your chicks for free. Oh, dear. Did I just find this segment's bumper? Oh, I think I did. Yeah, we're not going to give anybody money for just sitting around doing nothing. Even though they did plenty earning the right to that unemployment compensation, because working people are the ones who suffer for the benighted economic policy decisions made by idiots like Newt Gingrich. There's a number, but I would have the business leadership of the country describe the number. Merciful Jesus. Every time we let the business leadership of this country describe anything, we wind up taking it in the shorts. Jim noting by email, their remedy is the exsanguination of the middle and lower classes. I'm having a stiff drink. Think I'll join you, Jim. Sweet Jeebus. Ron and Raleigh writing in, gold dollars, silver dollars, million dollars. Come on, Bob. These guys and gals slave over hot computer screens and telephones all year long, working their manicured fingers to the bone to earn their million-dollar bonuses. You are such a cold-hearted anti-capitalist. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I guess. Where did I get what I'm reading? Well, I'm reading a news story out of the New York Times. Tax fear may move bonuses earlier. And I'm also relying on dear old Newt Gingrich's appearance on Fox News Sunday. By the way, where are those bonuses going to come from? I mean, we haven't gotten around to the point where we actually let Goldman Sachs print its own money yet, right? No. Where's it going to come from? Taken together, corporate America is at present, they are comfortably well off, back to Daffy Duck, economic philosopher. They may be cowards, but they're greedy cowards. Right now, corporate America is sitting on a reserve of about, and understand when you say about with these kind of numbers, it's really the only way you can express them. They're sitting on reserves of about $1.6 trillion. Yeah. $1.6 trillion. So let's say there's 5,000 of those typical workers who are going to get a $1 million bonus. Well, isn't 5,000 million 5 billion? Yeah, I thought so. So what percentage of 1.6 trillion is 5 billion? Well, 1 billion is 1,000th of a trillion. So, less roughly, I'm doing math on the fly, I'm probably wrong or something. But less than five one-thousandth of the cash reserves, if there's 5,000 of those people. Maybe there's 10. But trust me, corporate America could get busy and spend all day and not touch it. And while we're at it, don't think for an instant that it's just Wall Street. They're not the only ones sweating this stuff, the idea that they might actually have to pay an extra $20,000 to $50,000 for the privilege of remaining American and remaining safely and comfortably ensconced upon their padded seats of their Bentleys, or pulling their $15,000 shower curtains when they go to cleanse their grotesque and corpulent bodies. It's bonus season in the insurance industry too. It's bonus season in the pharmaceutical industry. It's bonus season in the healthcare industry. Oh, baby, it's bonus season! And it's also Moran Monday on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know how to reach the program. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Yeah. I want mine too. We'll be back. We'll be right back.
wire noises. He's banging on a bundle of us. Oh, that ain't working. That's the way you do it. Get your money for nothing. Get your chicks for free. We got to install microwave ovens, custom kitchen delivery. We got to move these refrigerators. We got to move these color TVs. Listen here. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on your MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Money for nothing. Chicks for free. Money for nothing.
Means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, I know. That song got played to death back in the day, but that's only because it was awesome. And so much truth to it. You know what? It ain't about rock stars. It's about the rotten bastards on Wall Street. They're the ones that have it sticking in the camera. Right? Yeah. Welcome to, back to the second hour of Moran Monday here on the Horn. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, and we will go straightway to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Scream.
Yeah, I know.
Scream.
Hey, Susan.
Scream. Okay, Moran, candidate, big time, Barack Hussein Obama. He just caved.
When? He caved? Really? It's been announced? He caved?
On the TV just now, got up all pretty and nice, and caved.
Oh, there it is. Oh, my God.
I have also just now changed my party affiliation and sent the White House a message that basically said, F you. I was a lot more polite.
This is just stunning. This is the paragraph coming from CNN. President Barack Obama presented congressional Democratic leaders Monday with a proposed deal with Republicans that would extend Bush-era tax cuts for 2 years and unemployment benefits for 13 months, while also setting the estate tax at 35% for 2 years on inheritances worth more than $5 million, a senior Democratic source told CNN. Oddly enough, that's coming from Ed Henry. Oddly enough, that's almost word for word what the New York Times was reporting yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm gonna ask.
That's basically what he said on television.
I'm gonna ask a question, Susan. I'm gonna ask a question, and I understand that I'm asking this question rhetorically because we have neither the reach nor the scope to pull this off in our own right. But I'm a big believer, and maybe this is a bad idea. But I would love to see a charity fund set up that wouldn't really be a charity fund, Susan. And I would like to see enough money raised to compensate for the screw job that the Republicans have put on unemployed people in this country, and pay it out.
So would I.
And pay it out to unemployed people, and take the setup and everything that goes with it. And show it to the White House and say, look, we're ready to take care of ours. So take the unemployment part of it out of the mix, and Barack, you take care of yours. Go ahead and give the rich their tax cut. Because really, hasn't he drawn a line in the sand on this? Because you know what? It's no... I got to work through this for a minute, Susan, because we're extending the Bush tax cuts for 2 years, but we're only extending unemployment for 13 months? Excuse me?
Yeah.
Do I have that right? I think I do.
Yeah. You do. But the line in the sand, I don't think this president is capable of drawing a line.
No, he just did, Susan.
The ball.
Susan, he just did. He drew the line in the sand, and the line separates him, the rich, the Republicans, from us.
Yeah, but you see, that line was drawn by the Republicans. It was not drawn by him. He just caved. He just said, okay, whatever you want.
Which is, to my mind, worse than being the Republicans. Now, understanding historically that the odium that attaches to the man, who do we regard as more sickeningly craven, more cowardly, more disgusting? Who do we hold? Who do we hold more disdain for coming out of that little meeting? It's Chamberlain, right? Neville Chamberlain is the guy that we laugh at and deride to this day for being a chicken shit.
Yeah. For being an appeaser.
Welcome to appeasement, Susan.
Yeah. And I gotta tell you, yeah, you were mentioning truth and history. Am I the only one that finds it interesting that basically the governments around the world, and especially the U.S. government, could really have cared less about WikiLeaks right up until the time they mentioned the fact that their next dump was going to be about a large U.S. bank? And then, woo-ha!
Yeah. Yeah. But this, I hate the cynicism that is involved with all of this. Because you can't do this as president and not be thinking and not have an advisory staff saying, don't worry about it, sir. Don't worry about it. In 2012, your Hope and Change Coalition will get back together again to reelect you, sir, because after all, you're going to be running against Mike Huckabee or Mitt Romney or Sarah Palin or Jeb Bush, and everything will be okay, sir.
No, what will happen is all of the former Democrats who are so disappointed and so hurt and betrayed, they're just going to say, fuck it, and stay home.
I'm not in a position to disagree with you.
So, Barack, you just earned yourself a single president, single term.
Now, but
be there that long.
I don't know that I'm willing to go that far. Simply because of the way our politics work. We have his numbers aren't that awful, especially among his electors. And again, don't make the mistake of thinking that the fear-based voting doesn't work on liberals and Democrats, because it does.
Oh, I know. But if he keeps it up, he'll only have a single term. I'm just hoping that the Democrats can come up with somebody, anybody, who is halfway decent, because then he will have a horrendous primary challenge, and he just might find himself losing.
Well, you know, I got the article in my email from a number of people today. Sandra was one of them who sent it along. This article from Huffington Post from Clarence Jones. I don't know if you saw it today or not. Clarence Jones was a big time supporter of Obama. He's scholar in residence at the Martin Luther King Jr. Research and Education Institute at Stanford University. And the post is titled "Time to Think the Unthinkable: A Democratic Primary Challenge to Obama's Re-election."
Yeah.
The question is, though, Susan, who's that guy? Who's that woman? Who is it? Can't be Kucinich. Kucinich had two shots at it, and he's not sexy enough or whatever, but...
I can think of one.
Who?
He used to be the senator from Wisconsin.
Nope. Don't think so. If he can't win in Wisconsin in a teabagging climate, he can't win nationally. And senators, generally speaking, Obama notwithstanding, senators generally don't do well running for president.
Well, there's that
I got one word for you.
Huh?
Howard.
Oh, yeah. Hey, hon, I would not vote for Howard in a New York minute. I would fall all over myself voting for Howard. Honest to God, I would.
But I think what we're looking at here is we're looking at, since we started the program out talking about historical fact and historical reality, Susan, I think we're looking at direct evidence of the deadness of the American political system. It's dead.
Yeah.
It's just dead.
Yeah.
Bless his heart. I got an email from Clayton a couple of minutes ago, and he said, "I offer you and your listeners the Democratic Socialist Party."
Yeah.
But you know, there's no Democratic Socialist Party in West Virginia.
Yeah. In which case, historical perspective, perhaps in view of the way things are going right now, people should really study up on the years 1789 and 1917. Not because of any advocacy of violence, but because of the things that led up to that.
I get the perspective that you're talking about. But we are a non-revolutionary people. Never mind all the fife and drum corps and all of the pseudo historical hogwash about the patriots of the revolution. John Adams said it himself. I heard Dr. Bill reference it yesterday afternoon. He said at the time of the revolution, one third were for independence, one third were Tories, and the other third didn't give a damn. Although Adams was too civilized to use a plebeian phrase like that. But it's probably true.
And let's face it, the third who were revolutionaries wouldn't have been that way if they hadn't been pushed into it.
A lot of them, absolutely, a lot of them were like that. But what I'm pointing toward is people keep talking about revolution in this country, and I'm just Mr. Realist. It ain't gonna happen.
No, I'm not talking about a quote armed revolution. I'm talking about the kind of revolution basically where things just basically stop. People just walk off.
But Susan, and I'm not being disagreeable to be. I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable. No, we are a slave nation. We are a slave nation. Okay. Even the white folks, they don't realize it. They don't want to think about it. But they're slaves. They're slaves to their mortgages. They're slaves to their cable bill. They're slaves to their internet bill. They're slave to their car payments. They are slaves to their employers because they're scared. If they've got a job, they're scared to death they're going to lose it.
Lose it, yeah. That's why every time I've seen a report of somebody who has just basically, who has had enough and basically said, fine, take the house, I'm leaving, goodbye, I'm gone, and they walked out. I sat down, I've done everything but the happy dance. Because that's one person who has stood up and said, take your whole system and stick it where the sun don't shine.
I understand it, but I just don't, even the walk away.
Yeah, unfortunately, aren't enough of them.
Well, this kind of goes back to the conversation we had Friday night about the Romans. I'm sorry, but it does. And that is...
Yeah.
That for the vast majority of the proletariat, sorry, that's really what they were called. It didn't matter a fig to them whether the country was run by a pair of consuls or a supreme dictator, as long as they weren't getting their heads cut off. That was a
not who elected his horse as a senator.
That was a country that had been through 100 years of civil war, and more than anything else, they just wanted that to stop.
Yeah, they just wanted to be left alone. and speaking from personal experience, if I had the money to buy a mountaintop and just be left alone, yeah, I'd probably buy into it. So, in a way, I'm just as much of a slave as anybody else. And that is just so sad for a country that used to be...
Used to be something?
Oh, yeah. I think this country started to die when we lost our frontier. Because, you know, okay, we got it back for a while because during the 1960s when Kennedy put us on this great big program to go into space, that became our frontier. And sure, not everybody could get involved in it, but mentally you could.
Well, you could have an emotional investment.
Yeah, emotionally you could be invested in it. And I think without a frontier, a society just dies.
Well, that certainly could be part of it.
Some type of frontier.
But more than anything else, organically speaking, cultures try to stay alive by whatever means possible.
Yeah.
And just as with those Romans, yeah, if you were a patrician, these changes of power could have big meaning for you because the next thing you could do, next thing happened, you could wind up on a proscription list and then some slave informs on you, and you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, and maybe that's what we're talking about here. This is so great, you know, great momentous decisions were made for the richest people in that community. And maybe that's what we're seeing here. The decisions being made have not a damn thing to do about people with no unemployment.
Yeah. Because let's face it, in ancient Rome, they didn't really give a rip about some plebeian trying to scratch a living out.
Well, I mean, they gave enough of a thought to it that they wanted to make sure that the free grain kept flowing. Because that's what stopped the riots in the streets there.
Yeah. Because they knew enough to fear a mob.
Yeah, but and see, that's the point. In the United States of America, we don't do mob.
Yeah.
And that's not a compliment to us.
No, it's not. We need to wake up.
We have a religious system that is geared toward maintaining the status quo. We have a social system geared the same way. We have a legal system geared the same way. And we have, and frankly, we have an infotainment infrastructure that is designed to keep people on the couch.
Now, Julius, the Roman consuls would have taken one look at the internet and just drooled, because they would have, my, yeah, all this fun stuff to keep all these people in word control. It, you know, the ultimate. I mean, I can't tell you how many science fiction novels I've read where this is the ideal way of keeping a population under control.
If you keep them home and let the world come to them, yeah.
Now, there is one hopeful sign. The attempts to restrict net neutrality. Believe it or not, I view that as a hopeful sign.
Oh, that people would... Yeah.
Yeah, because if people can't get in to view their favorite sites, you're going to have a really, really pissed off person.
Yeah, I'm upset. I can't vote for Dancing on the Stars no more.
Yeah. Who's going to end up getting off that couch? And that is a really, really good sign. Now, if the government, you know, quote, the government, had any brains at all, they would make sure that they had an, that the internet was free-flowing to everybody in this country, because that is the way to shut down dissent. Because they would talk themselves to death. That's what we're doing. We're talking ourselves to death.
Well, I hope not here, but yeah, I understand. Yes, I understand what you're saying. Susan, well, thanks a million. I'm going we've got them lit up, so I'm gonna roll on.
Did Agnes get home okay?
Oh yeah, she's fine.
Okay, good. Give everybody my love and give Doodle a kiss for me.
All right, thanks so much. You take care, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Calling for you?
More than, thanks.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I hate this crap.
I'm absolutely snowed in.
Well, I'm sitting here, with every passing year, it gets a little dodgier as to how many more years this roof is going to hold.
Oh, my God. You know, the only line in the sand that Obama has drawn recently is the one he got popped in when he was playing pickup across his mouth.
Expand, please.
Well, they had a big article in all the network news about he couldn't speak properly because he had some kind of lip injury or some kind of lines that a basketball put on his upper lip or whatever, so he couldn't enunciate properly. So there it is.
Well, see, I think a lot of people didn't believe it until now. But now can we finally admit that, you know, he never was? I mean, we St. Paul'd him, Jim. We transposed our hopes onto his ambition.
Well, I know we did. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, he's not a Chamberlain. He's a Quisling. The man has betrayed the people who elected him. And he signed some sort of compact with the devil, found in his own blood. I'm sure they probably bled him enough to get enough into his pen to sign some of these things and to do some of the stuff he's done. So there it is. And boy, when that contract comes due, I don't think he's going to like it.
Well, you know, I'm hearing things here. For instance, Maura, who's up in Jersey. Maura just wrote and said, "Hello, Green Party. That's it. If Obama is the candidate in 12, I will not, for the first time in my life, not vote Democratic." I think she means I will, for the first time in my life, not vote Democratic. And I think there's a goodly handful of people like that out there. I'm not going to go so far as to say that because I know that my fears will be manipulated. Although it's getting very, very close and very, very tempting to just say to hell with it and let these dogs drag the sled completely off the cliff and see what it's like at the bottom.
Well, when that happens, that's when you have unusual solutions being taken by very frustrated people who feel as though they have no other option than to take to the streets.
I don't find that something pleasant to speculate upon, Jim. I don't know about you, but I don't.
Well, hell, do you think I do?
No.
No, my God. As I said the other night, I mean, I serve this government, and I hate to see what it's coming to. And these people in Washington, these people who walk away, well, they've walked away with their own fat retirements and things of that nature. And, you know, when they, for example, with the federal employee thing being frozen, do you think that the wages and increments that Congress can award themselves were frozen? No.
No, of course not.
For judges? No. And they're trying to throw a sop to veterans by not, I think, freezing their COLAs and things of that nature. So what they're trying to do is to slowly but surely exsanguinate the middle class or the lower class of this country. That's what I've been, you know, in my email to you.
What blows my mind, though, Jim, is the idea that, because you know they're there, there's got this decision would not have been reached without a lot of advisoring. And I can't, and you're probably better, well, not probably, you are. You're better at this than me. How does that mindset work inside the Beltway where somebody looks at him and says, oh, this is a great deal for you, sir? How does that work?
It worked the same way that the devil spoke to Mephistopheles. And it worked the same way for these people inside the Beltway, which I have many times referred to as the Forbidden City. Inside the Beltway, simply, when these people get up there, the only thing they consider are their own situations, their own benefits, and the only time they care is every 2, 4, and 6 years.
Well, let me run a quote past you. This is what Obama said a little bit ago, Jim. He said, I'm not willing to let working families across this country become collateral damage for political warfare here in Washington. Sympathetic as I am to those who prefer a fight over compromise, as much as the political wisdom may dictate fighting over solving problems, it would be the wrong thing to do. So what Barack Obama just told us is that he is not willing to fight for us.
Exactly. So what's the difference between what you've just said and what I just called him? A quisling.
Not doggone much.
I don't think so. Don't think so at all. Now, of course, you have the tax cuts and things of that nature. And these are just gradual deals with giving them back. Tax cuts for the rich and a declination of benefits and things of that nature for those people less fortunate than they. You know, I have so many times called D.C. and I said, I don't feel like that anybody up there really represents me anymore. The only thing you represent are your own situations.
Oddly enough, I made 3 calls today myself, Jim. I made a call to Nick Rahal's office. I made a call to Rockefeller's office and got the usual answering machine. They don't answer phones at Rockefeller's office. And I called Blanche Manchin's office. And I explained to all 3 of them that it appeared obvious to me that the president was going to cave.
Well, yeah.
And that I fully expected complete intransigence with going forward with his cave-in on a congressional level. Now, do I expect Jay Rockefeller or Blanche Manchin to have that kind of courage? Oh, hell no.
Well, and the thing is, when 2012 rolls around, they're going to use all these cave-ins as weapons against him.
And against everybody running for office otherwise. Because in 2012, it's going to be like this. You got to vote Republican if you don't want a tax increase. Them Democrats want to increase your taxes.
Well, one thing I'll say about this man is he didn't have the guts enough to try to fulfill his promises and the intelligence enough to surround himself with advisors the way FDR did, the way JFK did, to say, look, you are in the long run committing political suicide. Or in the short run, it may take some of the heat off of you and stop people calling you nasty names. But payday Sunday, and it's going to happen. It really is. And I'm afraid that his lack of courage and his temerity is going to not only mean the end of his presidency, but the end of so many other things in this country that we've discussed. And that's very frightening to me.
Yeah, as I think it should be to just about anyone of any sort of ethical quality, shall we say.
Now, I just saw on CNN where they said that if the banks had not been bailed out and all this other kinds of stuff, the employment would raise to 25%, or would have raised to 25%.
That's a possibility.
Yeah. But, I mean, I was just wondering if...
But the thing is, the official number that we see, you know, 9%, 10%, that's the folks on the books, Jim.
Yeah, because when you go off unemployment...
You go off the books.
And you're not counted any longer. And you just go into some type of black hole somewhere.
You become a discouraged worker.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the official term, I believe. But this is absolutely intolerable.
And what they do is just basically tell you to get a wooden bill and go pick it with a chicken.
Ugly, brutal truth, Jim. Now, what I find interesting, I've got a sound clip here to share with you from Senator Bernie Sanders, who may be the last man with any dignity left in the Senate. And well, just hear what he says, because I've got an inquiry to make after he's done.
Not only is this bad public policy, driving up the deficit, increasing the growing gap between the rich and everybody else, I think it is bad politics. It's bad politics in the sense of who is going to believe the president or anybody who votes for this in the future when you campaign for years against Bush's economic policy and then you say, oh, by the way, that's what I'm voting for. I'm voting for tax breaks for the rich. And by the way, if it turns out in this deal to be 2 years, you can bet that that's just the beginning. It will be extended beyond that. So I think for a Democratic president, Democratic House, Democratic Senate to be following the Bush economic philosophy of tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires is absolutely wrong public policy, absolutely wrong politically. And I got to tell you, I will do whatever I can to see that 60 votes are not acquired to pass this piece of legislation.
Will you filibuster this?
I will do whatever I can on this. This is a very, very bad agreement.
So the 2-year extension of the Bush tax cuts, the 13 months on unemployment, that's the reported meat of the deal. You're telling us tonight that you will do everything you can to stop this deal, and this of course would push it into the next session of the Congress, and we would go back to the old rate. That's what you would take right now, Senator.
I believe, Ed, that we have the vast majority of the American people on our side. I think we've got to hold tough on this, hold firm on this, and not concede to Republicans who, as you indicated,
yeah,
have absolutely no inclination to compromise. They want it all for their rich friends.
They want it all. But here's the question, Jim. First of all, I hope he does filibuster. I hope Bernie Sanders hair lips hell in the process. But Harry Reid has proven that he doesn't have any patience with people on his own side filibustering. He'll tolerate it out of the Republicans all day long, but not so much out of his own. Do you think Bernie Sanders will be allowed to go forward with stopping this?
No. No. They will use some type of parliamentary procedure or whatever to prevent this man from voicing his opinion and filibustering. And, you know, it's gotten to the point that, like I say, the Forbidden City. People are losing whatever faith they did have. I know there was a lot of faith 2 years ago when Obama came in and said, vote for a change, and this, that, and the other. Well, I see change, but it's certainly not the type of change that he was implying or trying to portray as a presidential candidate. And now he's just become a party of the Forbidden City. You know?
Indeed. Jim, thanks a lot, my friend. I appreciate it.
Well, you take it easy.
Gonna try. Enjoy that drink you were pouring a little bit ago. I could use one myself.
Well, would you like to hear my Dean Martin version of this?
Yeah, do please.
No, I don't think you would.
No, because if you do that, then I gotta do the Foster Brooks version, and that just ain't gonna fly.
By the way, who was the did that song that you played during the break?
No, that was Dire Straits.
dire straits. Yeah, hell yeah. My God, I said the Alzheimer's is creeping in because they used to be one of my favorite groups.
You know, Mark Knopfler is a stunning guitar player, and somebody was saying in the chat room, you know, they played that song to death on the radio, and they did, but it's just an inspiration to go back and listen to the stuff they didn't, because the stuff that wasn't a hit was absolutely every bit on a par with anything that ever was.
You know, we've certainly come a long way in 20 years, haven't we? Don't blew us which way.
Well, there's the problem.
Well, stay warm in your studio. I don't know what kind of heating system you have in there, but I hope it's...
No, I'm just sitting here huffing propane.
Are you?
And I got little propane cylinders for a little heat buddy guy. And there's always a little buzz when you go to change the bottles.
Oh, my God.
Jim, have a good night.
I hope you don't take any smoke breaks in there. I mean, I'll look over on the horizon and see if I can see any pillars of fire leading whoever, wherever.
You take care, Jim. Thanks. Bye now. Email rolling in. The response seems to be pretty consistent. Ron in Raleigh says, when I voted for Barack Obama, I thought that for once I wasn't voting for the lesser of two evils. This latest capitulation has put paid to that notion. I'm so totally and completely done with this weak-kneed, spineless appeaser. I want to know if this man has any notion at all how outraged the Democratic base is over his continuous willingness and ability to throw his supporters under the bus. As a black man, I was so proud to see someone who looks like me ascend to the highest office in the land. But now my disappointment is so profound, I can hardly stand it. I will not vote for him again. William says, it's a sad and sorry day in America, and I know it's politics as usual. Yet, how has it been allowed to become so blatant that the American people within the eyes of the political arena are looked as bits and pieces of some forsaken cheap board game, and bargains are struck and deals are made and the working class heroes lose everything? What happened to real statesmen who spoke like JFK, for example, rather than this newfound, seemingly acceptable, dumbed-down fashion with the use of words such as you know or we all or y'all? Where the hell are we? And quite honestly, I don't see how are we going to rise out of this disaster, which is as serious as a heart attack to many Americans, yet some sort of trading post game for the politicians who will never be in a position that they have placed the people in. Wall Street has the bright lights, and Main Street is a tent city hoping for a candle. And Michael from Sebastopol, in regard to that line from Barack Obama, that quote where he said, I'm not willing to let working families across this country become collateral damage for political welfare here in Washington. That line, working families. Michael in Sebastopol says, Obama's working families work on Wall Street. There's a lot here to make you just want to scream. And it's okay if you do. Maybe I'm being too wishy-washy. Maybe I'm the one being played for a sucker. I know that there are some Green Party folks and stuff out there, the independents, and so it's, yep, that's you, Bob. But I tend always to recognize the political realities, and I'm really, really hard on myself about making vows early in the game. But maybe that's where I am. Maybe this really is where it is. Maybe this really is the straw that broke Bob's back. Maybe it doesn't matter anymore. I mean, honest to God, ask yourself. If the Democratic President of the United States, under the guise of working for working families, is willing to give tax breaks to the rich that are not going to have any benefit whatsoever to working families, and if the giveaway is 2 years of tax breaks for the rich in return for 13 months of pissant unemployment compensation, I repeat, pissant unemployment compensation, maybe it is time to sever ties. Maybe it is time to just say to hell with it. Maybe it's time. Maybe it's time for me to vote for Mike Huckabee or Sarah Palin or Jebby or who the hell ever. Maybe it is. I'm saying maybe. I'm not saying for sure. Because, again, I know how we'll be manipulated in 2 years. Jesus Christ, you can't vote for him, her, them, they. This time he'll get it right. Well, we've had 2 years of Barack Obama being Charlie Brown kicking Lucy's football. And with this decision, it seems to me that Barack Obama has just said, you know what? I'd like to hold the football for the American people for a while. Ha! You didn't see how it feels? Ah! Boom. I ain't kicking Lucy's football, even if Barack Obama's holding it. And you know what? I have never said this before in my life, but I'm going to say it now. You know what I'm looking forward to? I got to figure out a way tomorrow to listen to Flush Flimball. Because I'm flummoxed. I got to admit, he may be a couple of moves ahead of me on the chessboard on this one. Because I can't wait to hear how this cave-in job gets described as socialism. I can't wait. I may not be on the air tomorrow. I may be so liquored up by showtime just from hearing that bit of right-wing dribble that I'm incapable of getting behind the mic. I'm kidding. But really, how has the crowing begun yet? Are you checking out any of the other channels? Has the crowing begun yet? Some repig-licking, maybe Eric Cantor, Britney Spears fan, getting behind, in front of the camera saying, we got this today and we'll get the rest in 2012. He's on the run. Does Bernie Sanders have a prayer of stopping this? Are there enough people to ally with Bernie Sanders to make this not happen? Because, see, they're being leveraged over the unemployment business. But really, really, are the unemployed so desperate and terrified? You know, I'm the unemployed. Remember? We support the horn off of this, not Bob. I became the unemployed on July the 1st, 2005. More than 5 years ago. David in South Carolina says, hell, let's all join the GOP. Let's all do it. Where unemployed folks cause unemployment and the GOP saves the world from taxes. With this announcement from the White House tonight, is it safe to say that we are now a one part, not a two party, but a one party nation? Certainly feels that way. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Yeah, so, it's just unbelievable. You know, one thing that was killing me is that the Republicans also they wanted to get rid of the one tax cut that Obama gave, the make work thing. That was his. And the Republicans said, no, no. And so he caved and did this 2% payroll reduction bullshit, which is going to be a lot less, because that make work one was straight up $800 for a couple, $400 for a single. And he gave that up. I mean, it's one party, all right. A bunch of sort of elitist technocrats. I don't know what this is, but it's rapidly going to turn into a full-blown oligarchy, because this cave-in was just, that was it, you know. The Democrats are quickly becoming not relevant, and if they don't watch it, they're going to be wiped out.
Well, let's do a little process work real quick, Sandra, just in terms of how this happens. The president cannot introduce legislation in Congress, right?
Yeah, that's another thing that I'm amazed. Is Nancy Pelosi actually going to... She has to introduce... They have to introduce this. This is what's killing me. The Democrats are going to be the party that's extending a Bush-era economic that's bad economics. I mean, I don't even know what to say about all this, how wrong this is in so many ways.
Well, I mean, really, who is going to introduce this?
No, I'm interested. I called Pelosi's office, and I said, is she going to actually introduce a new bill to give tax cuts to the rich? Silence, and oh, I'll pass on you. You know, the same thing they always say to people. But, I mean, you know, the few of us who actually know how it works somewhat in the Congress, that's my big question. And anybody else with any sense would be asking that, too, because we're going to have to see them actually come up with a bill with extensions for the rich for 13 months. Let me ask you something, Bob. Where do you think the unemployment rate is going to be 13 months from now?
Oh, Jesus. Even under the most conservative projections, it's 11%, isn't it? 12?
Okay, well, yeah. Basically, I don't really get it. I don't really get why. And, I mean, it's just terrible. It's terrible when he comes out. And to me, I'm like, I don't know. There's a lot of people in Congress who, I guess they're going to beat him over the head with the unemployment insurance or something, because it's not really a done deal. Let me tell you something else. Michelle Bachmann, she's saying she don't know if her people are going to be voting on this. So the Republicans are going to have to get people in line, too, because she said, I don't want to add that unemployment on there. That was Bachmann's comment.
Yeah, but see, she has no credibility within her own party, Sandra.
Well, I'm not saying that it's going to stop by her, but it's interesting that, Obama walks out talking about this deal, and they're all sort of glad-handing. But, I mean, it isn't a done deal, because the last time I heard, anything to do with taxation and appropriation has to come out of the Congress.
It has. Well, I mean, that's where that old saying, you know, that the House holds the purse strings comes from.
Right. So, I mean, it's shameful that this man is now going to expect the Democratic Party to fall in line and push this horrendous piece of shit through. For what purpose?
See, I'm doing it again. This is one of those moments, Sandra. But, you know, you asked, you know, what happens to the unemployment rate? Is that what we're about here? Why not extend unemployment for 2 years if you're extending the tax cuts for 2 years?
Well, exactly. Not only that, but the way this economy is going, if you look at, I don't know if you read Christopher Hedges, we're talking now just a permanent underclass, which means they should have permanent unemployment. The dole.
Yeah.
Oh, but Clinton got rid of that. And now we got this bitch in power who, next up, the Republicans are going to be demanding them to raise the debt ceiling now. So when they get in, they can spend as freely as they want. Now, I may be wrong about that, but that seems to be what I think is next on the agenda. Because they don't want to be, why would they want to do it later? They can do it now and have...
And then say those tax and spend Democrats done that.
Right, and then they'll be able to spend like they usually do, the Republicans. So there's a lot on it. There's more to come because he done bent over, and it's on and cracking. And did you notice that Clarence Jones is now calling for a
yeah, I read that. I read that earlier today, and it kind of blew me away.
I'm like, hello. You know, if the Negroes are rolling, it's a problem. Yeah, Obama is bubbled out. I don't know what's going on with that fool, but...
Well, I asked the same question. I asked the question to Jim, and I'll ask it to you, Sandra. Who are those people that are surrounding him who say, Mr. President, this is a great idea? Who says that?
Yeah, it's exactly millionaires, other millionaires, some billionaires making decisions about things that have no bearing on them whatsoever. They don't give a F. and we need to be real scared of the Social Security madness, because see, what's going on now is like, oh, they've raised the taxes, so that's a, you know, could be a $700 billion hole in the budget over 10 years, because I'm assuming now it's permanent. I'm not going for a temporary. It ain't. It's,
no, because you can't campaign in 2012 on this.
No, consider it, no, it's just going to be extended, because I think they're going to lose the Senate and the White House, because the specter of Citizens United, they spent $4 billion on this midterm. What the hell do you think they're going to spend in 2012, Bob?
Oh, my God. It'll the money will flow like wine.
Right, and they will wipe out what's left of the Democratic Party. I'm serious. I mean, maybe I'll be wrong. But, you know, and also on the horizon, in case you missed it today, because I sure in the hell didn't, the Supreme Court accepted that challenge, that Walmart case.
And yes, they did.
I'd be goddamn. Because when the Supreme Court accepts cases now, we know we're about to get fucked.
Yeah, because it takes the rats plus one.
Well, I'm just saying, though, and this is serious, because now they want to fuck with class action. See, all the tools that we the people have to deal with redress is being snatched away. And I just see some serious dark times coming.
I don't think you're overreacting in the least, Sandra. This is, and you know, okay, here's another question. We know what 8 years of the Bush tax cuts did to America.
16.
What happens when it's 16 years?
Well, no, it's just going to be a, I mean,
no, at some point, and what I'm asking here, at some point, those typical workers who make $1 million bonuses on Wall Street.
Well, they don't have to worry about juggling their bonuses around now, do they?
Don't reckon.
I read that article, too. I was like, you got to be out of your goddamn mind writing this shit. Yeah, listen. No. Obama is so full of shit talking about working families. He needs to take that out of his mouth from now on, because it's a joke.
Well, to say that he was going to help working families, I guess we're supposed to take it from that he means the unemployed? Well, they're not working families, and you're not going to help them out. But I mean, they desperately need the unemployment compensation. I'm not saying that. But God Almighty, Sandra, you're going to help them for 13 months, or is he saying that by extending the Bush tax cuts for the rich, that those dribblings that are left over for the people who make less than $250,000 a year, that's going to help working families?
No, it's the same thing that this Cats Food Commission is doing. It's offering a way for him to say, oh, we're going to have to cut entitlements. He already said it pretty much in an interview that Americans are going to have to face hard choices and entitlement. Those are the cold words of neoliberals who are trying to impose austerity under the auspice of a crisis. Okay? This is what we have going on right here, and that fool is the front man for it. We're looking at a Hoover-type presidency now, where we have stagnation for the whole term, even if he's reelected. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's crippled.
And I may, you know, I'm not going to say like you. I'm not going to say, oh, I'm not going to vote and do all this BS. But you know, I'm struggling right here because he is doing more damage, you know, with his fake, socialist tent that he keeps being called. I can't get past that. You know,
well, you know what? I asked the question a few minutes ago saying that, you know, oh, I can't wait to listen to Rush tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, that my ears start bleeding at the very thought. But David in Tennessee's already given me the answer to the question. Tomorrow, come tomorrow, it'll be 9 a.m. your time, Sandra. It'll be noon for me. But tomorrow at about noon, you're going to hear Rush Limbaugh scream, why did the Republicans give the Kenyan Muslim socialist any damn thing at all? He's a failed, powerless president, and the Republican Party has caved again.
Right, because it's not permanent, right?
Right. Well, and because the unemployment was in there.
Oh, the unemployment. And also, though, I don't know if you know, but he completely gave them everything for the estate tax. Now it's you know, just 35%. It used to be 55%. It's ran in with a $5 million exemption amount.
And that's not for two. Is that for 2 years, too?
Oh, it's supposed to be for 2 years. But let me tell you. I mean,
I know. 2 years don't mean nothing.
No, I may be wrong about this, but I think that, I don't know what Obama's thinking. He may squeak back in because I just don't see, I don't know who's going to be on the horizon, but who knows? Maybe it's going to be Jeb Bush. But they definitely are going to lose the Senate just because of the money that can be spent against anybody and everybody. And so the Democrats need to watch out, because if those so-called progressives who were able to come back this time because they stood for something, they better watch how they vote right now. Let me tell you something.
Well, what will Harry Reid do to Bernie Sanders if he tries to stop this?
Oh, well, God bless Bernie, but he will be rolled like he always is. He come up trying to, and all of a sudden Harry Reid don't know what filibuster is anymore. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, that's what I expect, because Harry can drop a rock on his own. He just doesn't have any stomach for standing up to the people that actually hate this country.
And same thing with Obama. You know, they'll be threatening. They, you know how they'd be doing beatdowns on progressive, the Dennis Kucinich
thing. Yeah, is it time to take Dennis up in the airplane again?
Yeah, that whole thing. Well, we're going to throw you, we're going to do a Argentina on his ass up in that airplane, Bob.
I think Jim would remind us that the Latin term is defenestration.
Well, you know they threw people out of helicopters and airplanes and shit, so... You know,
I don't. I wish I had enough of a crystal ball to understand what it would take for to wake these people, the people of this country up. You know, I started the program talking about that quote from Danny Goldberg's article over at The Nation about, you know, if I believed, you know, all these historical inaccuracies. But I don't think I know how to express it properly, because people keep challenging me on this. The American people, we ain't got no gumption. We don't have any get off the couch in us anymore. As long as the Coors and the Miller and Budweiser keep cranking out the pissy light beer, and as long as the NASCAR races run, and football on Saturdays and Sundays and hoops and whatnot, and as long as Bristol Palin's on Dancing with the Stars, the American people don't give a damn.
Well, no, it's incredible. I mean, I don't know what it's gonna take, but there's also, you know, the idea that people are too busy trying to survive, too, which I think has increased quite a bit. But it's not gonna get any better if when Ben Bernanke is on fucking television talking about, oh, we gotta get a handle on this gap between the rich and poor. What's up? That fool looked like he was scared to death. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I did.
He looked hella nervous. I'm like, ew. Did that look like somebody you want to be comfortable with and charged with the monetary health of this nation? He looked scared to death.
And maybe that's because he understands.
Well, that didn't help me. I was like, wish I hadn't seen none of that. Okay?
It's the horror movie and Sandra's going into the basement. Don't go there!
No, it is getting to that point. I'm so... And then we cap it off with another NAFTA-like Korea thing. That slipped under the radar. Did you know about that?
Yeah, I did. I keep reading all this stuff, and I never get to most of it in the show. But
no, I just, you know...
And the news cycle has no time for it either.
Oh, no. They don't have no time for it. Long they didn't have no time for... Verizon and individuals getting money from the Fed. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't the thing that was killing me. The corporations, I'm like, yikes. But the individuals, oh, well, I wasn't too sure about this, but, you know, I made a 13% return. If unemployment had been a little bit higher, I might have lost it all. These are the discussions that was going on amongst the rich that got a little, the beak, are you saying, got their beak wet?
Yeah, I just want to wet my beak, yeah.
They got their beak wet, and, you know, because the Fed was just handing out money. But that hit the news for about what? A second?
Yeah, bing. And, you know, there's a, and I guess it's sort of ancillary to all of this, Sandra, but I can't help but think back, to when Ted Turner invented the 24-hour news cycle. And he was going to create a, news network that had, because his concern, and I remember this well because I followed it, I was young, but I followed it, his concern was that there wasn't enough time on the nightly news to do justice to all the news stories that needed covering because news was important. And so he was going to create a 24-hour news channel that could do all the news. And he started with that, and yet we find ourselves in 2010, almost 2011, bemoaning a 24-hour news cycle that doesn't have enough presence of mind or attention span to cover more than three stories, and two of them have to be missing white women.
Well, no, and I mean, that's just all by design. I mean, there's no pressure or anything on these media outlets to do anything except for infotainment. They don't want people to be aware that, oh, by the way, the government handed out $3 trillion to wealthy individuals and stinky banks. You know, just calm down now. Look over there, and we're going to shut down WikiLeaks. I mean, you know, I'm just sort of, yeah, it's horrifying. The situation is absolutely horrifying. I'm like, damn, I just want to, yeah, part of me just wants to get up out of here. Shit.
I think that more often than I care to admit, but then I look around and go, get out of the country? I can't get out of the county.
Well, no, I mean, it's not realistic. It's just, you know, when I'm sitting around thinking in my head, thinking, oh, this is way up north, and, you know, I'm not too sure what, yeah, the Obama thing, though, is just, he did exactly what we thought. That's the thing. It's just like, is it getting that predictable? I mean, so what? Now he's going to get start? Is he thinking he's going to get start? And he's
okay. This is
ass on tail?
This may be the part where Sandra swears at Bob for the first time in our long history. One last thing: is this Kabuki theater? Does he know that there will be an uprising inside? Inside the house against this, so he can say, well, yeah, this is what I wanted. I tried to do it for you, you know, and I did it because I'm not a communist and I'm not a Kenyan Muslim. I'm really like, you know, I'm you. And he knows all along that this thing will die at the end of a lame duck session and the tax cuts will expire and everybody will say, well, look at him playing 11-dimensional chess.
Well, listen, I mean, one can only hope, you know, but I don't really see it because of who he has around him. And the constant pandering to business because they're not business friendly enough. The NAFTA-like trade deals, which is just another job sucking mechanism, you know.
Yeah, another moment of Ross Perot's giant sucking sound.
Oh, it's just horrific, you know. And he's still going to be called nigger, socialist, Muslim. That's the thing that kills me the most.
Well, I will be waiting with bated breath for 6 p.m. Eastern time to come along tomorrow night, because if it's there, I want to run the audio of Flush Flimball saying the Republicans have no spine. They gave it all away to that Kenyan Islamo-fascist.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I definitely will listen to hear you tell what happened, because I can't bear to hear it. Hey, listen, so the football looks like they're going to have a war stoppage, don't it?
Yeah, it does, and you know what? I'm as much as I'll miss it, I'm all for it. Go do it.
I mean, these owners, are they really that greedy? I was laughing at what's his face. I can't remember what player it was who came out and said, "Did you hear about that? What was his name?" One of the high profile players just sort of called out the football league totally. He said, "You're worrying about safety, but you want to add two more games."
I saw that. I don't remember who made that.
I can't, who it was.
But, I mean, it'll be a lockout situation. It's not like the player's walking out.
Oh, no, it's a lockout. And, yeah, but it's just...
Does that mean under the weak-kneed labor laws that we have in this country that we will be treated with some amateur NFL football? Will there be replacement players?
Oh, God, you know, I mean, the thing is just so disturbing because there's a moneymaker all around, but those people who own the teams, I guess they want to make more.
Well, you know who surprisingly turned out to be, and because I never expected it from him, but who turned out to be a surprisingly good authority on the background behind this is Rick Smith, who follows me most nights, not on Monday nights, because he gets preempted by Monday Night Football, oddly enough. But he knows the background skinny on what these what the owner bastards are actually doing to the players. Because I don't have enough of the particulars to really go into it. I wish I knew Rick was listening, so because this is fascinating. Unless your contract is guaranteed money,
yeah.
When you go on when you get badly enough injured to be pulled and benched, you ain't got no contract no more. You're on workers' comp.
Yeah, it's not like, wow, that's incredible. I knew it wasn't like baseball.
And you go on, and when your career is over, you have health care for a finite period of years, and then, baby, you're on your own.
Oh, I know. Well, as we see, the way, you know, as crippled as these people become at the age of 48 and stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and, you know, Dandy Don Meredith died.
Oh, I know. I saw that. I saw that. They had this sort of iconic picture of him with Frank Gifford and Howard Cosell.
And he died of a massive brain hemorrhage. Now, he played for the Cowboys when the Cowboys was getting roughed up a mite.
Yeah, no.
And the helmets weren't much.
He was 72.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, okay, sure, maybe it could have been the high living or, you know, whatever it was. But I can't watch, I can't see news like that of, you know, brain hemorrhage, football player. You know, this stuff really does have downstream consequences.
No, it's just, that football thing, it just will be interesting because I find it so troubling that an entity as profitable as a football league is going to stop working because, what, they don't have enough? You know what I mean? I'm so sick of the...
Right, and David in Tennessee pointing out that an NFL veteran gets 4 years of health care. And then it's strictly Cobra.
And so, it's incredible. So what do they want? They want two extra games, and then they want no health care, and they want to cut the rookie fee. I mean, you know, I just all of it is just disgusting, you know, because they're doing just fine. I don't really understand why they want to do this, but, hey, good luck to them. Anyway, sorry, it's just one more thing I wanted to mention. There's so much. Did you see... Krugman, he seems to be down for the count too.
Yeah, the December 5th column. Yeah, he's not a happy camper.
No, it's gotten progressively worse with him. He that article, he just seemed so disgusted. I had never read anything like that from him. But anyway, listen, you have a good evening, and I will be listening tomorrow because I need to get that lowdown about OxyContin, because I can't bear to listen to it. I appreciate it.
Fortunately, if I can predict anything with any accuracy, bless their hearts, the folks at Media Matters for America will be listening and take one for the team.
God. Anyway, okay. Have a good one.
All right. See you, Sandra. Bye now.
Bye.
More emails rolling in. By the way, if you want to go read the Krugman column, New York Times, of course, the title of it, Let's Not Make a Deal. And Sandra's right. This Krugman is getting grimmer and grimmer and grimmer. Ron and Raleigh writing, will they own this? When the numbers come out and not a single goddamn job results from two more years of these tax cuts, will the Repiglickens own this? Will they say, gee, we were wrong about tax cuts, let's try something different? My guess is, to quote Agent Orange, John Boehner, hell no. And I don't think that's a guess. I think that is a prediction based upon observation of empirically gatherable data. Because there won't be a job come from. That's all just BS for the Sunday talk shows. This has nothing to do with job creation. It has everything to do with the fact that they. Oh, look! It's the first. They want it all. It's that simple. This ain't rocket science. They want it all. And no, they won't own it. They won't have to own it. The only way they would have to own it, Ron, is if there was somebody there to call them on it and make them own it. Now, who's going to do that? Chris Wallace? Sean Hannity? Rush Limbaugh? They won't own it because they won't have to. No one will point them out for the miserable failures that they are because they own all the people who could do that. It's just going to be whistling home on the range as far as that's concerned. Because they won't have to own it because they haven't had to own it so far. Virtually no one is making the jobs argument like we're making here. A few, yes, but not a lot. The simple fact of the matter is, if it worked, we would be awash in jobs. But it doesn't, and we're not. David in South Carolina noting, Republicans can do anything. They just proved that they can destroy the economy, refuse to fix it, and get elected in droves. They can and will do whatever they want. Passport fees are $135 to get a new one for anyone who's checking. Jim noting, when the tap runs dry and there's no power for the cable, not to mention resources for basics, how long will the lower and middle class allow these rubber bullets? And see, I'm not trying to be negative, but the cable won't go all the way off. And food won't become impossible to find. It'll just be at subsistence. Because remember, this is all Milton Friedman. The evil old bastard's been in the dirt long enough to have rotted. But this is all Milton Friedman, University of Chicago, economics. You sacrifice working people for the sake of the money class and on the altar of the so-called free market. And Friedman himself acknowledged repeatedly that desperate workers are the best workers. So the cable won't be turned off. Gas will be barely affordable. This is how you string the fix out for people who can't afford the whole bag. Oh, can't afford the dime bag today? I got a nickel bag. Here, cook it up. See? It's good. William says, I'll tell you what boggles my mind to no end. If I dare walk past the TV set when my wife has it on and look, I see serious news issues in a few minute bites, and then the mind is suddenly jolted and focused on buy this 3D TV, or stop by for the latest McDonald's offerings, or buy gold, or see what drug might be right for you. Ask your doctor, assuming one even has a doctor. What boggles my mind and drives me insane is how... excuse me. See, there I go muting the mic again, because I won't do to you what Flimball does to his audience. What boggles my mind and drives me insane is how anyone can switch for complete horror to someone selling anything at all. How does one switch their mind on and off so easily and willingly? I can't do it, never could, and it has become so much worse than I ever imagined. Well, thankfully, you have the Calm Act coming to make sure that the ads are run at the same volume as the TV around you. See, the lame duck Congress didn't have any problem getting that done. Interesting, huh? 18 minutes past the hour, you know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, and we go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, we butted heads on our immigration, but I'm going to leave that one alone.
Okay.
See if I can bring the other side of this to the table.
Okay. Ike?
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, let's look at where the pressure is going to lie. Now, this is presuming whether it's the trade agreement gets through or whether the hardcore Democrats go along with this deal to even pass it in the first place. You never know. I don't take anything for granted thinking that I know what's going to happen. The same way that I don't sit here and pretend to know that there isn't some sort of strategy behind this move by Obama. But I will say this, if it does go through, How long and how long do you think it'll be before the radical part of the Republicans, which is the Tea Party and some others that they drug along with them, before that side of the aisle starts looking at them and going, well, now, what the hell's going on? You were supposed to get in there, and you were supposed to do these cuts, and you were supposed to tame this deficit and get this spending all down, and, now we're looking at the numbers, and the numbers continue to skyrocket, and why aren't you getting your job done?
But, Ike, haven't they, they've had those numbers on the tax cuts all along, right?
Well, I understand that, and the other problem that you've got is what we discussed the other night. And we discussed off the air, and I continue to say it until the Democrats grow spine and get the backers and put a media propaganda machine in order and into the order that the Republicans have theirs. You're going to continue to get your ass whooped, and you know that as well as I do.
No, it's the absolute truth.
You're going to get your ass whooped until y'all get up off your asses and you either start flooding their switchboards with calls or the Democratic hierarchy gets off of their checkbooks and they spend the money and they get behind people like you and Stephanie and the rest of the talkers that are talking from the other side and go up against them in everybody's cars, because that's where the brainwashing is taking place.
You know what? I think I think you would like a lot, Ike, if you go over to OsborneInc.com and look at his post today, How the Left Loses at CultureConf. He's got a link to a Daily Kos article called Progressive Donors, It's Time to Step Up and Help Build Something by a writer named VC3. And it's exactly what you're talking about, Ike. It's about actually stopping this silly business of throwing all of our money at campaign candidates every 2 or 4 years and actually starting to build the infrastructure that can do the work to get those candidates elected.
Like I told you off air, I warned the DNC about this 20 years ago before Rush Limbaugh ever came on the air. I told the DNC to let their members know, and this was back when the airwaves were free, you could actually get on the air and you could say things about either side of the aisle and you didn't have this propaganda going on. But once Clear Channel, and you know me, I came from Atlanta, I knew Sean Hannity before he went national. I saw him when they sent the limousine from Fox News and picked him up, and they put the new hair and fixed his teeth and did everything for him and stuck him on TV. I knew Neil Bortz when he was on Ring Radio.
Wait, back up. New hair and fixed his teeth?
Oh, yeah. He didn't look anything like that when he was on radio. Seriously, he was groomed for it, the same way that Joe Scarborough was groomed for it, although they didn't have to do much to him. He looks pretty much as he was. But he was groomed for it. Now, by the way, do you remember the curious case of Lloyd Clausutis?
Oh, gosh, yes. I'm one of those people who actually goes, heck yeah, when Lloyd Clausutis' name is mentioned. The young, talented, and lovely assistant to then-Congressman Scarborough, who didn't have anything wrong in her entire body, was mysteriously found dead. Yes.
Yep. Well, everybody was focused on Gary Condon, who, curiously enough, the woman turned out it was murdered by an illegal immigrant, but we won't get into that. But be that as it may, again, here's what I'm seeing. I'm thinking he's a Chicago politician. I still think he's got tricks up his sleeve. And I think that if you look at it, as much as everybody's screaming, well, let me ask you something. Where the hell were the voters? The Democrats that supposedly supported him. What did you do for his candidates? You let them get their ass whooped, didn't you? You let that man's party get decimated. And then you turn around and now you want to scream because he's caving. Well, he's got no political power to start with because you let his ass get whooped in the midterms. Beyond that, not only that, but, you've got this massive propaganda machine that continues to work against him. I guess the best thing that he can do is a fallback position at this point, and the only thing that we can do is highlight what is going to happen over the next 2 years. And personally, to tell you the truth, being somebody that's been on unemployment for quite a long time, I'll be the first one to tell you, if I had a van, I'd jump in the van and I'd go live in it. If I had a van and it was paid off, I'd give up everything. have unemployment. I don't give a shit. You know, that's one thing about the rich people. That's one thing the rich people don't really understand, and even some middle class and some poor folk don't understand. There's some of us out here that once we've been all the way down under the bridge and living in an abandoned car in a junkyard and going through the things I've been through, you don't scare me. I don't give a damn what you do. That's why I never buy into any of it. I don't care.
Well, you know, you can't explain to a right winger or a teabagger or whatever the fact that those unemployment dollars, no matter how much or how often some right wing idiot says that the people on unemployment sit on their money, they don't. They pay their bills. They pay their mortgage. They pay their car payment. They pay to keep the lights on. They try to save a little bit left over for beans and rice. And so what we're talking about with unemployment is actually economic stimulus, because it actually comes out to be more money than gets paid out.
Exactly. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I explained that to a Republican shop owner here when I got into it with him. And I said, you know what, for all of your crap that you keep talking, guess what? I wouldn't be standing here in your store if I didn't have food stamps. And by God, do you realize how much business you would lose? You know, they don't think about that. That's the same way they don't think about, well, I can get cheap labor, and I don't have to pay them much. I don't have to provide them benefits and stuff. So that means I can stick more money in this pocket. But then you turn around, and they look at their taxes, and they go, well, damn, I got to take all this money out of this pocket. Well, you know, this is the way it works with labor. You pay me now or you pay me later. You're going to pay. I don't give a damn which way you think you're going to do it. You can either pay it up front, or you're going to pay it in tax. But here's the thing. Okay, let's let this go to the natural end of where it's going to go, where I think it will go if it does go through the way cards are playing out right now. All right, so now the pressure's on the Tea Party and these damn Republicans about cutting entitlements. All right, cool. I'll tell you what, let them go. Let them just cut the living hell out of everything. These people, including these Tea Partiers, all these old people out there talking about cut government spending and all this crap, that are sitting on their Social Security and getting their Medicare and Medicaid, and they've got the nerve to get out there and be raising hell. Okay, fine. Let's go ahead and bring the cuts. And then when it knocks on their door, they're going to scream like little pigs. And the first time, I'm telling you, that when they start feeling the pain, then it'll flip again.
If you could make that pain applicable only to teabaggers, I'd be right there with you.
I understand. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know this is going to go across the board. It's going to go across the board. There ain't no two ways about it. And, yeah, the rich are going to keep riding and sitting up on top in their ivory tower, and they're going to be looking down and watching all the peasants fight for the last scrap of cheese. I understand that, too. But, you know, you're talking about, oh, and by the way, I got to suggest a song for you that you need to get. Traded Dylan for Dollars in Cable TV. I've been bitching about that since the 60s. You know, where are all the old hippies, you know, like myself, you know, that used to get out there and fight all the time? By the way, where the hell are the college kids? As a matter of fact, if there are any college kids out there listening, which I don't think they're smart enough to, a lot of them aren't, but, you know, they're not plugged in at all. As a matter of fact, they've got a lot to go for as far as blame for what happened in these midterms. They didn't turn out.
Well, we've got one college kid that I know of for sure. She is a freshman at Princeton. She worked her butt off to get in there. And she posted, her name's Cassie Ike, and she posted an article on her blog a couple of weeks back where she lamented that very thing. She said, my generation can't conceive of problems with Social Security because my generation can't imagine being 40, let alone 60.
Well, you know, trust me, when I was, you know, 17, I didn't expect to live past 25, and I damn sure didn't trust anybody over 25, but... You know, don't get me wrong, I understand it to a point, and I was hoping maybe this downturn in the economy would give them something to taste to where maybe they'd get up off their ass. But obviously it wasn't enough. So, again, you know, maybe it's gonna take, I guess it's gonna take more pain. And if it's gonna take more pain, the Republicans are the party to deliver that pain, you know, and maybe that's the long-term strategy. That's the only thing I can see because, by the way, again, like I said, you lost Byrd and you lost Kennedy. Byrd was a parliamentarian that knew every trick in the book. I mean, we were really missing him. But, you know, for all this time they said that they had a majority, they really didn't have a majority.
Well, see, now Ike, there's something that kind of scares me a little bit because I saw an article over the weekend where Jeff Merkley, junior senator from Oregon, is making all the right noises now about changing the filibuster rules in the Senate. And, you know, he's still got a majority, so theoretically, that's why I mentioned this. If, for instance, they change the filibuster rules in the upcoming, the new Congress in the Senate, because the Senate has the right to set its own rules. They do that, theoretically, you know, they've still got a Democratic majority. But you know what? When you gather up the entirety of the Republican Party and you add in, Joe Manchin, and you add in Joe Lieberman, and you add in Ben Nelson and Mary Landrieu and David Pryor, suddenly you've got enough to pass legislation on a simple majority vote, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think your point is very well taken. There never, ever was a Democratic majority in the Senate. There was a majority of people who called themselves Democrats, but that's a far cry from being a Democratic majority. Because as long as Ben Nelson and Mary Landrieu and David Pryor and at the time Blanche Lincoln are calling themselves Democrats, that ain't a majority.
Right, and also, but just from the pure loss of Kennedy and Byrd, that threw two monkey wrenches into the whole deal right there that delayed the idea that we have even a bare majority. But I agree with you. You know, at some point, you got to deal with these so-called blue dogs. And I remember watching the vote on the House floor over the weekend, and I saw where 14 Democrats lined up with the Republicans. And as far as I'm concerned, if you want to target anybody, any of those guys that have been doing that, those are the ones that need to go, the same way the Republicans complain about Olympia Snowden, et cetera. I mean, you know, you're either in or you're out. But I really do, you know, my little crystal ball, what I see coming is, like I said, I think he's doing this, and I think he's, you know, to maybe our detriment, but yeah, he does care about the lower middle class, and that's what, you know, he's making a deal. But I think in the long run, the end strategy is now they're going to have to put up or shut up, because this has just added how much more to the debt, and now they've got to deal with it. And, you know, they're not going to come through. And if they do come through, and they do somehow or another, you know, wind up with a cut package and the kind of crap that came out of this damn commission, 15 cents extra on a gallon of gas and cutting Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and all this stuff, let me tell you something. There's one group, and they're going to wish the hell they never messed with, and you know who that is. Don't tell me the NRA, buddy. The AARP will hand them their ass in the next election. You can bet it.
I hope you're right. I'm a little bit of a curmudgeon, Ike, in that I don't think... I don't think the American people are that sharp. Because what you're going to have for 2 years, two years of the House of Representatives in Republican control, at least, I guarantee you there will be a flag burning bill. There will be some prayer in schools bills. There will be some really noisy anti-abortion bills, none of which is designed to go anywhere except back home to the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, oatmeal-dribbling, house-helmet-wearing electorate that sends them there.
Yeah.
And when it gets there, they're going, look at that, he's patriotic American. I can't wait to vote for him again.
But when, like you say, when at the end of towards the end of these 2 years, when you see that the deficit numbers don't come down, when you see that the jobs don't get really produced, and when you start to see these cuts that these radical Tea Party and the Republicans want to do, and when that pain through those cuts finally come to the old people and finally come to the masses and actually get in their pockets and knock on their doors, then that's when it's all going to become real clear to those people. And that's when, that's what I believe, if this is what he's doing, I think that's where they're probably going to go. And you know what? In the situation the Democrats are going to find themselves in the minority, in some cases, seeing how they got their ass handed to them and people wouldn't come out and support them, maybe they are in the mindset of going, okay, you guys didn't support us, y'all keep screaming for this, we're going to let the Republicans do what they want.
You know what's most
fascinating?
You make the argument about people, about the voters not supporting them. There's one fascinating piece of data out of that, Ike, and that is this.
Mm-hmm.
We lost 60 seats. Of those
250,000 votes.
Right, but of those 60 seats, at least, what, 26, 30 of them were those so-called blue dogs. And they were in the Deep South. And what the, and you know, that tells us a little, because in large part, the real live, honest to Jesus progressives or liberals or whatever you want to call them, they're still there, with the notable exception of Alan Grayson. But Jesus, he had a target painted on him. They would have spent six times as much money to defeat him. So, you know, the progressives survived. But what the loss of the, you know, the loss of those blue dogs, you know, up to half of the losses we sustained were of imitation Republicans in the first place, which merely tells us that when people are given, when people in places like Mississippi and Alabama are given a choice between voting for a Republican or a fake Republican, they'll vote for the real thing every time. And that's what we lost.
Well, and you've got to look at not only the youth vote, but the independents and which way they went. You know, the independents, you know, they're a big block on their own. But I don't know. You know, all I can say is button down the hatches and hold on. And that's the only strategy I can see coming out of this. But there again, I'm not guaranteeing that the Democrats are going to go along with any of this. He's got to deal with the House and he's got to deal with the Senate. And, you know, he might be able to get the Senate to go along. I don't know, but he's going to have his hands full with the House. And oh, by the way, how much longer until we start seeing some major changes with this damn bullshit cabinet they got, man?
That's the question that I keep asking throughout the course of the program tonight. Who was standing there when all of this cave-in was being discussed? Who was standing there telling Barack Obama, this is a great idea for you, sir? Because that guy needs to be unemployed tomorrow.
And I'll tell you what, the hell with Chicago, Rahm Emanuel should have never left. I mean, at least he had the balls to stand up to people and put it on the table. I mean, you know, for God's sakes. But, you know, the rest of his cabinet, I can't think of a one of them in there that I really got that.
I'm not sure that's not a little bit of Rahm working right there. Oh, absolutely, work with him, sir. You know, this is a pro-business agenda that you're pushing here. This is going to be good for business. Because remember, that's how it's being touted. It's going to be good for business. And Rahm was a straight-up good-for-business kind of guy.
Well, he already gave him seven damn tax breaks, or seven damn tax cuts before this. You know, but it still comes down to messaging, brother, and it still comes down to propaganda, and I agree. And the word, you know, needs to be pounded upon all these different shows and our representatives, and the hell with calling the representatives. Call the damn head of the DNC. Call up into the DNC structure and just tell them, we've had enough of having our ass handed to us on the radio. We need to get something going. And let's get the donors and let's get Hollywood elites and whoever we can get to line up the money. And let's, you know, I don't give a damn if it's just one damn show, but we need to get somebody on there, and we need to be in the cars on the AM signal. That's where we need to be.
You're right in that regard, and that means that it has to be a two-pronged strategy. If we're going to go off in the weeds and talk about this a little bit, and I don't mean that negatively. It just there's a slight aspect of inside baseball about it, but it has to be a two-pronged strategy. One, you've got to have people capable of getting in behind the microphone 5 days a week and doing this, and it's not easy. Secondly, however, you've got to have stations to put them on. And that means that you've got to build some. Well, let's go back and talk about Air America for just a minute. Air America was renting, basically leasing tower time. They were leasing radio stations.
Yep.
They were buying time, just like the local preacher does on your AM dial up on the 1500 kilocycles area.
And okay? They were mismanaged.
Well, they were mismanaged, but you know what? The very beginning and essence of mismanagement, Ike, is when you're buying time. Because right. That means you're not spending money on long-term growth. It's the difference between renting an apartment and buying a condo. Because you never build any equity. And so
remember, I told you that I tried to keep Air America on the air here in Charleston. They were on AM 1340. I talked to the station manager, and he said, well, you know what? I need $50,000 to keep them on here for another 6 months. And, by the way, 1340 in this market, there's only one station in this market. It's 1250, and it's all right wing.
That tells me tons, Ike, because, again, that's about buying time. On the other hand, Rush Limbaugh, he started out straight barter. In other words, right. You run my commercials and I'll give you my program for free. And right. Boom, there's 3 hours of programming that some harried local program director doesn't have to worry about. Now he's gotten to the point where you have to, for instance, this little low-rent market that I was in, it cost the station that I was on $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 a year to run Rush. That's why they don't run him anymore. They run right. Neil Bortz instead, because Neil Bortz is free, or bartered,
so to speak. In some cases, too, I heard that they were actually paying the radio station to run the program.
In some cases, yeah, but mostly, as the way it now stands, is it's all either barter or you pay for Rush. And so when you tell me that the guy in Charleston wanted $50,000 to keep Air America on for another 6 months, that means he was selling his time just like he'd sell it to a Sunday preacher, which means that Air America never had a chance. From the moment it went on the air, it never had a chance, Ike. And that's the second prong of this strategy that I'm telling you about. One, you've got to have the talent to do the work. Two, though, you've got to have a hot stick to put them on, and that means that those guys in Hollywood and the political mucky mucks and here and there and everywhere. The other part of that problem is that they have to put their money up, and the way you would do this is you would form a consortium, you would form a syndicate, and the syndicate would buy radio stations, and you don't have to buy. WLW Cincinnati. That's 50,000 watt clear channel. You'd love to have one, but you don't have to buy it. What you do is you buy the little 5,000 watt daytimer in Elk Snort, Indiana, and Busted Knuckle, Alabama, because those are the places where some hairy little bastard is trying to figure out how to find 3 more hours to fill up his programming day, and he's running the radio photography contest, you know, if you can imagine anything less suited to radio.
He's running a fishing show.
Right, yeah, golf on the radio, if you will. And you go to that guy and say, you know, run it. And those stations don't make money. This is the other thing. And I'm really glad you opened this door for me, because sometimes people need to know how, you know, it's like magicians telling how the tricks are done. But the fact that
I got to tell you, Bob, I got to tell you, 1340 is dead air, and they're playing beach music oldies. I don't even think they make it into the ratings book. I don't know how in the hell they're surviving. And you know, you're right. You've got to go around. You've got to cherry pick the little stations that are starving to death like that, that can't go up against the syndicate that's already in power, which is the Rush Sun.
Well, not just that, but when you form this syndicate, you've got to have a real come to Jesus talk with them. Because even Clear Channel was six guns a-blazing for a while, and then, lo and behold, where did they go? Bankruptcy. Where did Citadel go? Bankruptcy. Where did Sinclair go? Bankruptcy. Because radio, actually running radio stations is a terrible place to try to make money. Now, if you can own a radio station and the thing can't pay for itself, then you're screwing up. But it will sustain itself on, you know, free car wash with Philip at Fred's Texaco on Fridays. That crap works locally. But it will never work as a big money maker. That's why Rush gets paid by Premier and not by Clear Channel so much. Okay, I mean, you get some, but what I'm getting at is, you've got it, because this is a problem. Right-wingers and ideologues, they don't give a damn how much money they lose. Witness Rupert Murdoch. Okay?
Right.
He doesn't care how much money Fox loses for him, because he is pushing a product. He's pushing an ideology. He doesn't care about the fact that he's paying $30 million a year to Glenn Beck, and Glenn Beck doesn't have any goddamn advertisers. He doesn't care, because it's about ideology. And oddly, that's the least conservative way to go about money management. But if you sit down with a bunch of liberals and say, you know, we want your money, they're going to say, how much am I going to make back? And that's where the come to Jesus conversation is, Mike, because you say, you're going to get your money back. You're not going to get your money back plus 10%.
Well, two things real quick, and before I get out of here, let your listeners know what Murdoch lost in the first five. 5 years of operation, but also too, couldn't you arrange this consortium as some sort of a nonprofit or structure to where, you know, you take the losses and write them off or something like that?
I'm not sure.
And also one other thing that we talked about, the forensic accounting.
Yeah.
You know, that's something else I might ought to throw out there. But, yeah, you amazed me when you told me how much Murdoch lost in the first 5 years of his operation.
Oh, God.
$100 million a year?
Oh, God, he was bleeding it.
Good grief.
But he doesn't care. I mean, he was lighting cigars with $100 bills, Ike. But he doesn't care.
Who do we have that can match that money?
George,
Gate?
No, I hate to say this because he's the center of every one of these conversations. George Soros's money.
Soros?
Is liquid. See, Rupert is all tied up in his business ventures. George Soros could buy Rupert Murdoch for what he thinks he's worth and sell Rupert Murdoch for what he's actually worth and lose money hand over fist and never count the cost.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's there. But you know, who can get the meeting with George? Ted Turner? In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
You know, it amazes me, for instance, that Fox News has a radio division. That's where the people like I can't think of, but that's where there's they do talk radio. Why has CNN never done? I mean, they've got a radio division. I used to work for them, but all they do is All they do is top of the hour news, Ike. They don't do long form talk.
Exactly. You know what happened to CNN? Now, come on now. Ted got his ass handed to him.
AOL Time Warner, yeah. It was for all intents and purposes, it was hostile.
Time Warner wrecked CNN. They wrecked that company.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm not talking about just ratings or financially. I'm talking about ideology. They took that thing and they watered it down so bad. You know, seriously, MSNBC is the only one that's really got any kind of fight on them at all.
And they're only there because it's working for them monetarily.
Well, you know, I just urge any Democratic listeners, independents, you know, minded, you know, that are just tired of hearing the propaganda again. Like I said, I know it takes forever to get on, and yeah, you got to lie like a dog to get on to start with. You got to be real nice to the board op, and you got to be, you know, quick when you get in on the air, and you got to hit them hard, and you may only get one time to do it. But, you know, if they had enough Democratic callers that could flood those boards, I'm telling you, they couldn't keep them off. And then, you know, let them rail and ban you off the radio. But, you know, if enough people line up against them, you can wreck their call-in show. You can absolutely wreck it to where they've got two choices. Either don't take calls or, you know, deal with it.
And I tell you what, when Limbaugh doesn't have callers, you can tell. Because he's gurgling and gargling and gulping all over the... Oh, yeah. He likes those blinking lights. Hey, Ike, I got to roll out, but good conversation, my friend.
Thanks a lot for your time, buddy.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care.
See you now.
Bye now. Yeah, don't thank me. I thank you for your time. That's how this works. And let's see. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Gene, what's up?
Well, I hate to be... I wasn't going to call in. I called in once and I don't want to talk what I was going to say because it's like, I'm sorry. I really don't honestly think, I think the thing with the Democrats, what they're doing is they're basically, they see the handwriting on the wall and they don't want to stick around and be the really top core Dems are seeing the handwriting on the wall and they don't want to stick around and be, you know, just a foil. And I really do think they're going to let the Republicans take it. And I think what's going to happen is the Republicans are actually going to be able to deny it for a while, but I really think that business and all of them are going to say after a while, geez, we've got this, we bought this government, do we really need it? I mean, this is now an expense. I mean, when you really think about their what they'd have to do in taxes as opposed to the bribes they pay, if they've got, frankly, a 0% tax rate, why even bother with the bribe? I think what they're going to do is they'll say, okay, we're going to just completely take every last bit of everything on for ourselves, and we'll, for the people that are willing to pay, we'll provide those services. After all, the Republicans don't want to provide privatize anything anyway. And then finally, because I know from talking to some of the Republicans that there are a few of them that they despise the Democrats, but the Republicans aren't too far behind. I mean, when I hear right wingers say that the Republican has turned, made a left wing turn, it's like, huh?
No, but that's deliberate misinformation. That's to make sure that the knuckle walkers stay good and whipped up, Gene.
But I honestly think eventually, I think the business community is going to say, you know what, we don't need these guys either.
Yeah, but remember, at this point, the Republican Party does not have it all. If you as your operating philosophy the fact that they want it all, then there's still more for them to get, so they will maintain the charade so long as it takes for them to have it all.
Except that what makes you think the Republicans are going to be the ones that get it? The Republicans are going to be the ones that get it all. I don't think so. They might have it for a minute, but the minute they have it, I mean, they're the people that employ them, they're going to take it. And these guys are going to be screwed.
No, but they still, it's still patronage, and it's still a patron-client situation.
Oh, sure it is, but it's not going to be that way for very long. It really isn't. Because basically they want to see the country, you know, broken up, and you don't want to do civil war. How do? You start having people, well, we'll take this group of people that have, sure, they've got the fire department that's privatized, but they've got really decent good cable. They got a la carte cable. I'll take that. You see, I really think, you know, I remember, I used to say Hedges or one of those that basically said, you know, the oligarchs have contempt for democracy. And basically, this is all about, you know, making sure there isn't a democracy, because I honestly think that Generation Y, the ones that come after, they're going to say, you know what? Well, who cares about democracy? These business folks, they seem to be taking care of their own. And I mean, do I need morals if I can eat? See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But that's a calculus that's reserved for us and not for them. Right?
Well, I guess so, but I honestly knew it was probably a bad idea to call in, but I mean...
No, it wasn't a bad idea, Gene.
I think
the nepotistic relationship between the oligarchs in business